God, we feel that presence, and we recognize it, God, as being you in our midst. And this morning, Father, we honor you. We glorify you. We ask again that your Spirit fall afresh upon us. God, that we may see you, that we may be, Father, empowered and strengthened through you. Bless this morning. May it obviously bring honor and glory to your name. We ask it in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, as you already know, we are sharing this morning on our trip to Nicaragua. And the youth, I was so grateful to be able to be a part of our youth as they went down. I'm just going to say this, and it probably will come out a little bit later, but I'm just going to say this, that no matter where we went, our youth were noticed. And in fact, there were places where they said, my goodness, you got a really good group. In fact, we were at the hotel, and the people said that, you know what, most people complain about the food, and we didn't hear one complaint from your youth group. And I was, dare I say, proud to be a part of that group. You guys did very well. Well, I wanted to start out with a hola. Let's try that again. Hola. Ah, there you go. That sounded a little bit more familiar to me as we were in Nicaragua. A lot of words were flowing at us and a lot of thrown at us, and we didn't understand hardly any of it. I'll start this way, too. You know, people gave me a little bit of grief about my shirt this morning. It's a Nicaraguan shirt. I told them, I said, if you hang around with Larry for a couple weeks, you're going to start looking like Larry. So it's kind of where I'm at this morning. I thought I would look like Larry. What an experience. And I think this morning we probably cannot paint a complete picture of what we experienced. Marilyn and I are going to share a little bit about our experience the first several days prior to the youth coming down. But one of the verses that actually really stuck out to me as I thought about our trip and I thought about the people that we encountered, and it was, and it may sound odd to you, but it was a great picture for me to look at, and that's the Pentecost, the coming of the Holy Spirit. And when the Holy Spirit came on Pentecost, it says, now there were staying in Jerusalem God-fearing Jews from every nation under heaven. And I love that. I love that picture. When they heard this sound, a crowd came together in bewilderment because each one heard them speaking in his own language. Utterly amazed, they ask, are not all these men speaking Galileans? Then how is it that each of us hears them in his own native tongue? And they go on through to list this amazing list of people from across the nations who gathered together, who understood God, whose God's voice was spoken to them in their own language. And it just, again, really cemented in my mind and in my heart the fact that we worship a God that is universal. We worship a God who is across this nation. We worship a God who hears and speaks in the language of everyone across this nation. And it was just really good to worship with them. They may worship differently. They may speak differently. They may live differently. But the worship of the same God. And I love the words of Peter. Peter says this, that God says that these are a people that belong to him. They are, as he would say, God's very own possession. And God doesn't specify nationality. He simply says this, you are a people who I have called out of darkness into my marvelous light. Once no identity as a people, now you belong to God. Once no mercy, and now a people who experience God's mercy. One of the things that, after the 2 weeks of being there and interacting with so many people, I thought to myself, you know, I'm never probably going to ever see those people again. And then I was reminded, oh yes, I will see those people again. They are believers, they're followers of Jesus. And that just left me with a lot of hope, a lot of encouragement, I should say. If you wanted to know what maybe my emotions were when I got off the plane in Nicaragua, actually Managua, I actually thought, what the world did I get myself into? Getting off that plane and beginning to go through all the customs we need to go through, but we entered outside the airport and it's just total chaos, but total foreign. I mean, no one spoke English except for Larry and Dot, and we hung on to them for all our lives. Part of the reason why we wanted to go down there is we wanted to really shadow Larry and Dot. And we wanted to listen in on their conversations, which was of no value because we couldn't understand them. But we also wanted to kind of see where they connected. This is a heart of Larry and Dot. I hope that you understand from this morning that not only have we been pulled into the heart of Nicaragua, but the heart of Larry and Dot are there, and it's very evident. And so it didn't take me long to see all the connections that Larry and Dot had. And it actually began as we exited that airport. Larry gets on the phone to Rafael, if I can say his name right, a young guy who owns his own business, who has buses and things of that sort. But he came to pick us up, not in just in any ordinary vehicle. He came to pick us up in a Toyota Hilux. If you get a chance to look at him, Larry and I would love to have him over here. They're not allowed, but it's a great looking vehicle. Spent some time at Marcos and Lois's, which maybe some of you had some connections there. We stayed with them in Managua. So Marilyn's going to pick up and share a little bit, and then I will close out after that.
So yeah, as he said, we were picked up at the airport by Rafael in this amazing Toyota Hilux truck, and we continued to drool over those the whole 2 weeks we were there. And we found out real quickly that, and Rafael does not look any older than our youth do. He looks like this young kid, and we're like, oh my word, he has a family, and he's this entrepreneur, has these buses, and who knows what all he has, but just a wealth of knowledge in that young man. And we found out real quickly that he has become quite a friend to Larry and Dot through the years. And I don't know if I have this story all right, but when Larry and Dot had shared with us during the time that the Diego documentary was to be filmed, they told us how their camera equipment and things had been detained in customs. Rafael was very instrumental in helping to get that equipment, help Larry get that equipment out of customs, but he also had connections that he was able to get some equipment to help them get started while this stuff was being detained. And so hopefully I have that right. If not, you just feel free to correct me. So then it was interesting. We're leaving the airport, and Dot wants to do the great thing, and she wants to, since we're staying at Marcos and Lois's for two nights, she gets on her phone, and she's going to call Lois to let her know we're on our way. But by accident, she gets Quinta Shalom, which is their guest house that they own. And to our surprise, Dana Carey, who is a very good friend of ours from Hartville, answered the phone at Quinta Shalom. So that was kind of interesting. We got to see him a little bit on Friday evening then. So we get to Marcus and Lois's, and for lack of a better word, you could say our night started out with a bang. Marcus and Lois have these mango trees in their yard, and they are the most amazing mangoes. I must admit, I've never tasted anything quite like that, and it messed me up for the rest of the time. So I was bragging about these mangoes, and the kids didn't get to have any then the whole time. So anyway, they have these mango trees, and periodically these things fall from the tree and hits their metal carport roof, which is just which in turn sends the alarm on their car off. So it sounds like a shot and then a siren. And this happened about three times during the night. And, you know, you've got windows open, and then the dogs start barking in the neighborhood. And it was like, oh, my goodness, we are in for a wild ride, I'm just saying. So that was interesting. And the next morning, we had a fantastic breakfast, and we walked. They live really close to Sanafi, which is the orphanage. English word is Fortress of Hope, and so we walked down there and had a really nice tour of the facilities. And Vern and I have had some, we've never been there before, but our connections from back in Hartville at Maple Grove, numerous of the people from Maple Grove were on that board along with Larry and Dot. So you'd hear about Fortress of Hope a lot and had been at fundraisers. But so it was really, really neat to be able to tour the facilities and meet the kids and meet the staff. And it was incredibly evident there that Larry and Dot were loved and respected by all. So then we left there with their little blue Russian car they call is a Lata that they drive while they're in Nicaragua.
Not latte,
by any means. It was Lata. And it's been dubbed the little blue tin can. And so that was fun to ride around in that while we were there. One of the things that struck me looking around the neighborhood and being there was how all of the homes have black walls around three sides, and then on the street side you have the the metal bars, the wrought iron fencing and stuff. So you've got a gate to get in and the gates that open up to bring your car in, and it's like everything is all locked up. And on the top of the walls you have the wrap barbed wire going on, or sharp shards of glass. And man, that just really hit me. It's like, and at the guest house where we stayed, and a lot of the teams stay when they go, they have a guard on duty 24 hours a day. And so it made me feel, although it made you feel safe to know things were locked up and guarded, it just gave me a sadness to think that you have to live like that. And then in the poorer areas, they didn't have the block walls, but they had tin or sheets of metal that they still had walls around their homes. And so that was sad to me. I'm thinking, you know, we went into this little development, and I'm thinking, well, I live in a housing development, but wow, nothing like where I live. So it was very, very eye-opening to see how people live in other parts of the world. We met a lot of really cool people, which Vern will talk a little bit more about, and we got to go up to the top of the mountain, which the kids did then too. We got to go tour Creating Hope, another project that Larry and Dot seem to be working on, and don't know where that will all go, but that was interesting. But on the way back, of course, our poor little tin can had struggles. The traffic was incredibly bad, and the poor little thing overheated twice, that we had to pull off the road and let it cool down. So it was, very interesting. So it was the whole, there was just, I'm hoping the kids will say a lot. We didn't want to jump into the week that they were there, but just so many cool things that happened and experiences and meeting people, and just very, very interesting. And it certainly gave me and Vern a desire to learn Spanish, because, boy, you just felt that was such a huge barrier, not being able to speak and converse. And it was just a tremendous pleasure to spend the week with the youth group and all the sponsors. And, very rewarding.
I said there's some things that we wanted to learn about Larry and Dot and shadow them just a bit. There's two men in particular that really stuck out to me. Efrain, if I've said his name right, is that correct? Okay. He's a young man that was in Thailand for a period of time, and he came to visit us on the second day looking for his diploma. He'd gotten a diploma in Thailand. What impressed me is the fact that he was not in a hurry. He came and he sat down and he ate breakfast with us. I have no clue if he had breakfast earlier that morning or not, but he still took the time. And that absolutely blessed me, in the fact that we rush through our days and we rush through things and we don't take our time. But part of it was the fact that they knew Larry and Dot and the connection there. Probably the one that hit me the most was Faustino. Am I saying that right?
Faustino.
He was a pastor that they introduced me to. We went to see his mission, which he is raising hogs in the middle of Managua. I just don't know how that all worked out, but he's got him there, and he's raising these hogs. But what really drew me and sucked me in is he's got this pickup that probably none of us would really want to drive, His mechanic said if anything else breaks on it, he's not fixing it. And that's huge for someone from Nicaragua saying that that's not fixable. And but he needed that truck to haul the feed back and forth for his hogs. However, later that after meeting where he had raised the hogs for missions, we went to his house. And that house was very humble, very meager. But he pulled out chairs and he put them in a circle. His family came out and joined us a little bit off to the side. But he picked their fan up because it was hot, and he plugged it in and he pointed it right at us. And then he began to share some of his story. And, of course, I couldn't understand everything that was going on. But in that middle, I realized in a hurry the depth of relationship that Larry and Dot have with Faustino. But not just Faustino, but so many of those that were in Managua and even Matagalpa. When we went to leave, here's the picture I want us to think about. He asked us to stand in a circle. And then he asked us to pray that God would begin to move in the hearts of the people that he pastors and to pray for his mission with the hogs. And that's a picture I guess I didn't anticipate, because I no longer felt like I was outside. I felt as if I was drawn in to that, to be a part of his mission. I was invited to stand in the circle of believers, and we prayed together. But tell you what, that guy is on my heart. And so By day two, I'm sort of hooked. I'm sort of sucked into these people that I had never met before. And I began to understand the depth of love that Larry and Dot have for the people of Nicaragua. But I'll tell you a little bit of the rest of the story. I walked away, and maybe 3 days later, feeling so much more hopeless than I did when I met with Faustino. Because he calls and he tells us that he's had an accident with his pickup. A pickup that his mechanic said he can't fix. And yet he needs it. And what do we do? And I began to wrestle in a very personal way of what is helping him really helping. How do I help him? Well, yeah, most of us can just go and say, hey, we're going to raise the $5,000 he needs, and we're just going to buy him a truck because he needs a truck. Or we're going to loan him that $5,000 so he can go buy a truck. But is that helping him? And Larry did a very good job of laying that on our hearts and saying, what are you going to do with it, Vern? And so if you want to know what has happened to us, is that there's several of these people that have just sucked us in and drew us in and made us love them in a way that I never thought that I would. I don't think that truck has been resolved yet. He's got it up and running and he can still use it in some ways, but thinking about how we want to westernize people to make them like us is not the answer. So it's a battle. So thank you, Larry and Dot. Appreciate that. The youth will begin now and share their portion of it.
Yes, this has been well rehearsed here.
Hola, mi nombre es Megan, ¿cómo estás? Muy bien. Okay, so we got there around Saturday night, early Sunday morning, and we stayed at a hotel that was just blocks down from the church that we were working with for a few days. And so the next day we woke up, 7:30, 8 o'clock, and we got to eat a delicious breakfast of rice and beans with bananas, fruit, other stuff like that. But then we headed down to the church, and we got to meet Pablo and the rest of his family. If you don't know who Pablo is, he is married to the daughter of Diego. And so we got to hear, we got to look around the church, and it was very Pinteresty, and I liked it a lot. And so, and we got to hear the story of the church, which was they were actually looking for somewhere to have their church, and they found this place. It used to be an old movie theater, and they were actually renting it out, and right now they're actually starting fundraisers to be able and try to pay off the church so they can own it. And then we got to the orientation, which was Pablo and Brooklyn. Brooklyn was the leader of our group. She kind of went everywhere with us. And orientation was just how the rest of the week was going to go and rules and everything. Next, we got, normally they have their church services in the evening, so we got to set up for Father's Day, which was going to be their service that night. And then after that, we got to go back, get ready, and then we came back for worship. And as they started, I loved their worship. It was loud, they were clapping, it was like, it wasn't stiff, and they were, it was cool. Even the service, the sermon that Pablo shared, it was about fathers and their role in family, and it was really cool. And okay, so the after the service, Claire's going to share about that, but I have a little bit how the trip influenced me, which was noticing that even though we speak two different languages, we were still able to connect with each other very well, and made me realize that even though we aren't that different, even though we speak two different languages. And another influence was the orphanage we went to. It was just hard seeing that they came from families that, abusive families, and it was hard seeing those kids and hearing about some of the backgrounds they came from, which made me feel blessed with a family that loves and cares about me.
Hi. Okay. So after church, we were all kind of standing around talking to each other, like, what are we doing now? Like, what's going on? And we were just talking to each other and stuff, and we saw that their youth group was taking pictures in this photo booth area that they had for Father's Day. They invited us over, and we were all kind of like, oh, this is weird. Like, what are we doing? We don't understand what they're saying at all. But we had a lot of fun. We took a ton of pictures with them, and it was really fun. We made a lot of friends. We ate nachos. We had pizza. We played a lot of games. They love to play games. It was really fun. And then while we were eating our food, we got into a really big circle, and we introduced ourselves. Everyone said their ages. And their youth group has a really wide range of ages. They're from 15 to 33, I think. So there was a lot of different people there. It was a little bit difficult to communicate with them, obviously, because some of them spoke English, a lot of them did actually, but others of them spoke no English at all and really fast Spanish. So, but it was really fun to get to know them, learn more about them and what they like to do. We connected with a few of them specifically, and we built a lot of relationships. This trip influenced me through those relationships, just seeing how, like Megan said, even though there's a language barrier, we were still able to communicate. We were still able to worship the same God, and just experiencing a different culture was really interesting. So, yeah.
On Monday, we had rice and beans for every meal. And Monday was our work day, so we did a lot of painting at the church, and a couple of the guys set up some drywall for, like, they're setting up cubicles for the people that work at the church. So, yeah.
Hola, my nombre es Joanne. One phrase I learned, and the other one is, where's the bathroom? So, on Tuesday afternoon, I got to spend part of the afternoon with Dot and an acquaintance that she knows. Her name is Farah. And we took a sewing machine and went to her house, not really knowing what to expect. Dot didn't know if she can sew or how well she can sew or really anything about her, but she wanted us to come and spend some time with her. So we go to her house, and I don't know how you sum up that experience. We walked in, and she just lives in this modest little, what I think was kind of a dimly lit home. And she starts to talk about her sewing and bringing out outfits and things that she's done. And we said, how many outfits do you have? Well, I have 1,100, she says. It's not just an ordinary outfit. This is a massive, huge, huge skirt. The one skirt that she has, I think we have a slide of it maybe. She has 18 yards of fabric. Yeah, 18 yards of fabric in that skirt. And she has a treadle machine. So I said, through Dot, I said, ask her, how does she put gathers in that? And she showed me that she takes little and she folds it and then stitch, and then little and folds it and stitch. I could not believe this. So I said, Dot, ask her if she's ever like run a gathering stitch. So for those of you who sew, I mean, you just put your fabric on the edge of the foot and go a long stitch and run two rows of long fabric, and then you can just zip it right up. And she had never done that. So I said, okay, let's get a little piece of fabric, and she tried it, and she sat there, and she was like, oh, she just couldn't believe it. She has 50 hours in one skirt and 18 yards of fabric, and she's never done that kind of thing. But she's very talented at what she does. And she, I believe, was going to a Catholic church. Is that correct? Do you know? Okay, I'm not sure about that. But wherever she was, she also has the ability to teach interpretive dance. And she felt as if the congregation where she was at, the church she was attending, did not accept her skills, her sewing, or her need to express in worship through dance. So she was very frustrated at this. And when she started to attend Pablo's church, then she felt as if he was saying, yes, the way God made you is good, and I'm willing to let you be a part, however you are, of the service and our congregation, and he wants to use your skills. And I think it's just such a cool lesson for her that God wants to use her just like she is. So in the middle of all this, we're talking with her and trying to translate and do all this, and in walks this family who borrowed this outfit from her. They rented it from her. She had spent like $40 in materials to make this outfit, and she rented it for $65. So in 50 hours of labor, she made $20. Their daughter, who the outfit was for some sort of a competition, did very well, and she won. And the dad, this is so funny, the dad was so excited. He wanted to sing us a song. I looked at that, and I'm like, okay, sure, sing a song. Well, he breaks out in a very opera-type singing, and I looked at her, and I said, Kim, I wish we could video this because nobody's going to believe this. So he wanted to sing for us again. So we videoed it that time. So we had a lot of fun. But just seeing how Farah took the time out of her day, I think relationships above all is what spoke to us, because they don't care if it's in the middle of the day. What else are you going to do? Just take the time and be with people and let that be it. I think that some things that stood out to me is how they take time with others, and the everyday stuff takes the back seat. And here we have that so opposite. It's our everyday stuff that is first, and then letting other people come into our lives and have time to take and talk with them seems to take the back seat. And or maybe that's just with me, I don't know. But I'm just hoping that we can all kind of learn from that. Every Tuesday there is also their women's prayer group. They fast breakfast and lunch, and then they meet and have a prayer group. And, I mean, it was pouring rain, but we went anyway because that's what they do. So I was impacted. Thank you so much for entrusting your kids to us for that week. I have seen courage as they approach strangers. I have seen openness as they share their testimony with the group. I have seen a willingness as they ate a very different way. And I just pray that they all can hold this deeper understanding of Christ that they have experienced.
One thing that really stood out to me is that everything's so open down there. You can just, like, go into people's houses and say hi. And on Tuesday, we were sharing about, like, a vacation Bible school that kids could go to. And you could just see that the people weren't, like, really poor, but they were happy with a little bit, and that helped me see that the people are kind and acceptive and that you can be happy with a little bit, and you don't need a lot. And I also read in John when I was down there that Siloam means sent. I read that in John, and that just kind of spoke to me and helped me to see that no matter where we're at, like at home or in Nicaragua, we're sent to tell people about the gospel, whether that's through love or just being kind to them and spending time with them.
Every morning we had like a morning devotional, and on Tuesday a couple of the youth shared their testimonies. And then after that, we went around passing out tracts, like, house to house for their vacation Bible school. That was really cool because, like, we had to be interpreted, and it was just it was a different experience. I liked it. Then after that, we split into two groups, like, to go to different houses of prayer. Where I went, I shared my testimony that day, and then we also... There was, like, four ladies where I went, and we did, like, a Costa Rican prayer, which is kind of funny because it was in Nicaragua. But we all, like, stood and prayed at once, and then one lady would pray out loud, like, louder than everyone. We would all pray about one topic, and then another lady would come, and then we would pray about that. Then later that day, we went to a lookout over the whole city. And that's where we had, like, a message, and we worshipped with the youth, and it was really fun because we, like, got to dance around and sing some of their songs that they had, and it was just a lot of fun. My favorite part of the trip probably was the orphanage, and I got to meet a girl named Juana. She was 15, and all she needed was to be loved, and... we found out she wanted to be a stylist, and so she did Claire's hair, which was really fun. I just felt really a compassion for them, and I just didn't really want to leave. And even with the language barrier, we could still connect, and it was just a really good experience.
Hi. Okay. So on Tuesday, we went and handed out the Vacation Bible School papers that invited all the little kids to come to the church. And my group met this little old lady that had, like, a little shop in her house. And we sat in there, and we talked to her for a while, and she was really sweet about it. And she told us that she used to go to church, but then she stopped because they were, like, judgmental there. So we invited her to the church that Pablo was the pastor of. I don't really know if she went, but I'm hoping that we, like, planted a seed in her life so that she... could go later. And Pablo told her that he would have someone walk her there so she would be safe because it's, like, kind of far and she's old. But and then after that, we split up into two groups, and one group went and worshipped with the four ladies. I think it's four. Anyway, and then my group went to Farah's house, and we prayed with her and her family, and she told us everything that was going on in her life, and she was, like, really open and sweet about it. And it was crazy how we communicated so well, even though we didn't speak the same language. And, yeah, just being there helped me to realize that I should be more open and, like, happy with a little bit, because they were poor and they were so happy. It was crazy.
So, as they kind of mentioned before, the worship down there was really awesome. Even though a lot of the time we were worshiping with them, they would be another language, like at church. We knew some of the songs, like we recognized them, but just how passionate they were. And I think it inspired all of us to kind of bring it home in some way or another, just to not care. I mean, just it's with God, and it doesn't matter how everybody was just, like, loud, and everything it was loud. So it was, I don't know, it affected me in that way of just worshiping with God, and it doesn't matter what's around you, and just worshiping however you feel led. And we also had the one morning our own worship time, and it was just a song was playing, and it was just over, like, a speaker, and I think our youth group just really loved that time. It was just a song, and we just really were with the Holy Spirit in that time, and being with them, and yeah. That ruins everything. But so we were really impacted by their worship time and how we brought that home here, I think, in a way, just to not care and just be who you are with Christ.
We went to Diego and Gloria's coffee farm, and when we got there, we got out, and we're in, like, the middle of the jungle, and there's, like, big trees and mountains and stuff. And so when we went into the house, she had, like, bananas and coconut drinks. So that was really cool, really nice to get off the long bus ride and have food and stuff. And around their farm, they also had a bunch of, like, fruit trees and stuff, and we tried those. We had, like, banana or apple bananas and sour oranges and some other stuff that I don't know the names of. And so then, like, our beds were just, like, these really small rooms with bunk beds real close to each other. And so they had, like, mosquito nets, which were nice because we didn't get bit. And they told us to bring our own sheets. But when we got there, Gloria had already made our beds because she's real nice. So that was just, it impacted me because she didn't have to because we could have made our own beds, but she did it anyway.
So at the farm, when we first got there, then it was just really nice. Like, Gloria had these tables, like, there was, like, coffee beans in the center and, like, nice candles, and they were just, like, really prepared for us, and it was really cool. And so her food was really good, and it was really good, like, cool seeing all the things you can do with a banana. Just fun fact, a green banana, if you boil that, it tastes like a potato. So that was pretty cool. And something I really liked is she kind of, like, mashed up some bananas and made up all, like, sweet and stuff. I thought that was good, and just some really cool things with that. It was really good coffee on a coffee farm. That was really nice in the morning. But yeah, it was just really cool experiencing all the different food, and, like, you might not know what you're eating, and you're just, like, trying all the different stuff, and you're just like, oh, this is good. And it was just really cool with all of that. And so then Diego had shared with us one night while we were all together on the porch, and he just kind of talked about the church and how they kind of just spread it out wherever they felt God led them. And so it could be in a random place where it's, like, hard to get. You have to cross a river to get to the church, or just random places. And they were just following God and continuing on spreading the church. And I thought that was really cool. And something that touched me was while we were on the porch, then we had, like, this worship session. And we did this a lot, and it was just really cool that they would be singing in Spanish, and then we'd sing the same songs in English. And it's just we're all worshiping together, and that was just really cool.
Okay, so the first day that we were at the farm, we got there in the afternoon, and we hung out for a little while. And then we all piled up in a truck and drove, like, halfway up a huge mountain, and then they dropped us off. And we climbed up the rest of the way to this beautiful waterfall that was huge. And it was amazing how loud it was, but yet it was peaceful and calming. And so we were up there playing in the waterfall for a while, and then we went back down and got back to the house. And we were, all the youth and everybody was sleeping in the barn. And I got out of the shower and went back to change clothes, and there was a bat flying around in our room. And then Dad walked upstairs to his room, and there was half of a rat laying on his pillow. So that kind of set the mood, and we weren't really sure what we were going to get the rest of the time, but it was still a lot of fun. And then the next day, we ate breakfast and went to another river and seen a cave, and just kind of explored a little bit, and then went back to the farm, got ready. Alex lost a shoe on the way back to the farm and decided he didn't want it anymore, so he just left it there. Yeah, and then the thing that impacted me was that the people there are so friendly. They don't care about work as much as relationships. They'd much rather get to know you and be friends with you than make money and work and do other things.
Well, for me, I've been on a couple trips out of the country, Haiti, Costa Rica, and Mexico. So the shock of going there to a different culture wasn't as big for me. I got, I mean, I, it was kind of, it's happened before. So for me, going there and getting acclimated to the people and to different language and stuff was a little bit easier. One thing that changed in my perspectives, though, was short-term and long-term missions, the way I think about both of them. The church there was a local church, but there were also people from the U.S. that were working with them that were, I would consider, long-term missions. They don't know how long they're going to be there. But one thing that stood out to me is we can kind of get into a routine here and maybe, you know, wish that we were talking to more people in our lives and maybe that we get too busy. And oddly enough, I think it's possible that they could also struggle with that as a long-term missionary, that you get into a routine and a day-to-day, and not that you forget that while you're there, but just it's easy to fall in, no matter where you are, to, you know, falling away from maybe talking to someone that you feel nudged to, or, you know, putting yourself out there in an uncomfortable situation. So that's kind of how maybe long-term missions changed in my head. Short-term, usually I've been on trips where we go and do something. We build something or we help with cleaning something. But this trip was more focused on meeting people and immersing ourselves in the culture. And it struck me that watching the kids make relationships with people, talk to people that they can't communicate with, I'm trying to communicate with, and just being there and experiencing their lives in a different country. Just the thought in my head is maybe 20 kids going to a different culture, changing their, with all the years they have ahead of them, changing their mind on how they come back and live their life here is more powerful than going and completing a task. So.
Okay, so the first thing that we did on, I'm not sure what day it was, but we went up to a volcano. We drove up there, and we just took some pictures by it, and it was really, really cool because it was erupting, actually. But, yeah, so we took some pictures and just enjoyed the view. And then after that, we went to an orphanage, and we split up into some groups, and we the boys kind of went with the boys, and the girls split up to kind of like three groups. It was really awkward at first because we didn't speak their language, and like the group that I was in, we were sitting with them, and Jessica was trying to talk to them, ask them a few questions, but it was still kind of awkward talking to them. So after we kind of got to know them a little bit and kind of warmed up, then one of the girls went with Jessica and Sarah, and they went and played soccer with the boys because the girl really liked soccer to play that. And then me and Gabrielle, we sat with a girl for a while and tried to ask her what she liked to do, if she liked any games, and she really didn't want to play any games. So we asked what she liked to do in her free time, and she really liked to sing. And she was in a choir at her church, and she took us to her little place that she slept in, and she had these papers that she had songs that she sang, and we sat with her, and she just sang to us, and it was really nice that she opened up to us and just felt comfortable with us. And like Brooke said, there's another group of girls that opened up to them, and they did their hair and just talked, and it was really nice. So, something else that impacted me was on Sunday, one of the first days, I went with Sarah and was with their Sunday school class, like one of them, and me and her taught with them. The teacher knew English, but she told us to do a few things, but it was really nice that they opened up to us and they kind of looked up to us, and they still welcomed us and let us help them, even though we didn't know their language. So.
I have more of the boys' side of the orphanage. Walking in there, I didn't know what to think because I've never been to an orphanage. And it was pretty much just little concrete houses and huts, and there wasn't much to it. And we were kind of awkward, not knowing what to do. And I think Dot said something about a basketball hoop, so all the guys went that direction. And, you know, we started playing, and then, like everybody else said about that, they went to the soccer games or doing hair and stuff like that. But me and Bryce and Evan, we stayed around playing basketball with a little kid named Junior, who was, like, this tall, probably, like, 6 years old. He was a fireball, just full of energy, and it made it really easy for us to interact with him. And throughout that, I don't know where Bryce and Evan went, but me and Junior started playing hide-and-seek. And just, he was full of energy. So it kept me able to interact with him well. And then after that, we just kept on going the next thing to the next and started playing checkers. And I think Dot said, she came up to me again. She said, you know, you will never win. You know, he will cheat. He will find a way to win. I'm competitive enough. I said, that's not going to happen. And as the game went on, he would tell me where I need to put my pieces, and he'd move them for me. And I'd take his pieces and move them where he needs to have them. And by the end of the game, we'd all take each other's pieces. And one game, I just took the board and started walking away. You know, so we called it a tie. But it was sad to go, because you build a relationship that quickly, and you want to keep building on it. And you don't know how he feels or, yeah, where it's going to end up. And it's kind of like a broken heart after leaving that. But for my, like, personal reflection on this trip, I view it more as a practice of something to come, I guess, something bigger after this. And I definitely opened my eyes to young kids, and I feel more capable of hanging out with kids, and I feel comfortable in that area now.
Well, for me, it was kind of like Evan. I've done lots of mission trips. I've done missions long term. And so it wasn't quite the culture shock or so foreign to me. So it actually felt pretty comfortable. But I think what I got from the trip, though, is watching these kids immerse themselves in it. And I hope what they've learned and what they felt does not leave them and will take them, maybe not in the first year or two, but even down the road where it will take them. That's exciting.
Okay, so our bus driver, his name's Alex, and he seemed really quiet right at first and didn't really talk that much, and he really liked to do all the activities with us. He went on all of the same adventures that we did, up the waterfall and all that kind of stuff, and when he found out that we're going to the orphanage, he got really excited, because he was in an orphanage for 7 years when he was younger, and he really liked to interact with the kids, and yeah. We found out that he had two kids, at least, and a wife, and I thought that it was really crazy how he only makes $10 a day driving, and he still finds a way to take care of his family.
Yeah, we had a good trip. They've spent some time here this morning talking about the trip. I just want to acknowledge them. How many parents are here this morning of these? Could you stand up? Parents of youth. Here you go. Thank you. You can sit down. You've done well. You should be proud of them. You can sit down. It's okay. Thank you. They've been stretched. They were asked to do things that they'd never done. Never complain. Yeah. So by the time it gets down to me, that thing has kind of been touched on. So I'm just going to, just a couple of things. One was the whole idea, the mission focus. I mean, how many of you have gone on a mission, have ever gone on a mission trip? Raise your hand if you've gone on a mission trip somewhere. And out of those people that have gone on a mission trip, when you went, did you build something or clean something? Raise your hands. That's what we do on mission trips. So this is not really like that. It was like Evan had mentioned, and Heather, it was more relational. And so it was more input and educational. There are several people or youth that went along with us that are not here this morning. One was Shaylee, obviously, met us in Chicago, flew with us down there, and then she left when we got back to Chicago and flew back to Pennsylvania. It was good to have her with us. Adeline isn't here this morning. Herschel isn't here. And we had a girl from Ohio that met us here and traveled with us. Her name is Gabrielle Stewart. She kind of had a heart for missions in an orphanage and wanted that experience. It was good to have her along. So I'm going to read a couple of things that the one night in our debriefing, we asked the kids to just jot down some different ideas or where they seen God, how God spoke to them. And I'm just going to read few of these. They're not necessarily... Yeah, they don't have names. We've changed the names to protect the innocent. One person said, seeing God at work with the testimonies that different youth shared. Faithful is the first word that comes to mind when I think of this week. I felt God speak to me more this week than ever before. I appreciate the things I have and realize that we have way more than we need. A lot of the youth talked about the time we spent in worship and how that was kind of open and freeing to them. There was a comment about being able to sing and worship more freely and openly and loud, and a challenge to be able to do that when we get back home. One person said, a cup of coffee tastes better than ever before because I saw all the work that went into it. God has us here for a reason. Diego's story has encouraged me to follow God's path for me no matter what the cost. So just a few thoughts of what some of the kids had wrote. I'm kind of a logistics and a facts guy, so that means a little bit more to me than maybe some others, but just a few things. We had 25 people that went. Out of those 25, about 10 of them had never flown before, and 14 had never been out of the country. So I just kind of did an accumulated mile thing. It was right around 58 or 59,000 miles that we would have traveled together. We had no flats. We never ran out of gas. We were never stranded. The weather was beautiful. We had very little rain. I don't think anybody was sickness. It had sickness, really. We only had one girl that got kissed by a stranger. No one was caught smuggling things in or out of customs. Nothing was stolen. And like Alex said, I've never been beaten in checkers and so many times in one day than ever before. Another little fact is someone from church here, Merlin Lila, gave us some money to treat ourselves for ice cream. So we walked to a local ice cream place and hand-dipped ice cream, and we paid for that at the end. There were 18 of us that bought ice cream, and it cost $103, U.S. dollars, kind of expensive. That night, we went out for supper, and we paid for 26 meals, so there was more of us. It cost $153. So just a perspective there. If you pay for your ice cream. And I don't know why. It seemed like ice cream was more of a treat there than it is here. I don't know why that is. It was just, yeah. Nate shared a little bit about the bat and the rat, and I don't want you to think that I don't want you to think bad in light of. We were treated well. That's just the environment we were in, and that was to be expected. But I'm just glad it was me and not Joanne. The pace of life there, we've talked, a lot of them have talked about the pace of life, and there's a balance there for me. That was a little bit, I struggle with that a little bit idea because it seems like some of them are just kind of sitting there watching the world go by And so I need to find a balance somewhere there in between, a balance in between Rod and them. That's where I need to be, somewhere right in there. But as far as a challenge and what I challenge the kids, Diego's video of The Cost of a Dream, he talks about how the Lord told him to go back to Nicaragua in the cost of that. 7 years that it was. He says hard years. Accumulated debt, lots of struggles. But it all panned out in the end. He was faithful to tithe off of his profits. I think when that movie was made, there were 27 or 29 churches planted. When we were there, was 31 already. And he said by the end of this year, he would like it to be over 40. That's our goal. So, challenge to all of us is to be faithful to what the Lord calls us to do. And I think in talking to the youth, the Lord spoke to a lot of them, and I encourage them just to hold true to that calling and live it out and be faithful. I think that's all that we're going to share. That's enough. We're going to turn the rest of the time over to Don Larry for the sermon. Maybe not a sermon, but we're going to turn it over to them, so. Thank you. Thank you for your support in this group. It was through fundraisers over the years that made this trip possible, and that fundraisers all comes through you guys, so we appreciate it. Thank you.
First of all, it was a real pleasure to spend this time with the youth, learning to know them in a different way than we would have ever been able to know them or learn to know them otherwise. Lauren and Evan mentioned about building things, and we didn't build things, but we were looking at building people. And there's a lot of growth that happened here in this group, and we're grateful to RMM for them allowing us to take this time and donating their our wages or our compensation for this time at no charge to Siloam.
So I'm not going to be able to tell you about all of the growth that I saw in these kids. One thing that stood out to me, Nate was talking about the waterfall trek, and we climbed and pulled ourselves up on ropes and grabbed rocks and went through water and slipped on rocks, and I came up to this one spot, and there was Nate, and he reached down, grabbed my hand, and he said, "Now put your foot there and there," and he pulled me up, and I thought to myself, what a coach. And I just saw that kind of growth in all these kids. It was just really amazing. I watched every one of you, and you're just a great group of kids.
There were a lot of little things like that that we saw growth, and the challenges that they faced. It's been mentioned several times how people have expressed what they saw. We became good friends with the gal at the motel, and she just said, you know, it was so good to see this group of kids and them eating everything that was provided and not
going back for seconds
and thirds sometimes. that spoke volumes, and that was not the only place that happened. Brooklyn, one of the leaders or the main intern for leading this team in Nicaragua, mentioned this. She says, I have never had a group here that has been as well prepared as this group to interact with the culture here. And it was very apparent when we did a number of training times here that we and or looked at culture and how you might expect so that you could actually go and you entered the country with a different lenses on your eyes to view things and not be shocked. And that was very, very valuable and apparent. At the end, it comes down to this challenge. And Lauren mentioned this. What are you going to do with your life? Pablo and Brooklyn both, in their challenges to the youth, is this. What are you going to do with your life? How is this going to affect you? And Alan mentioned this as well earlier. How will you live your life? And then I'm going to close with what Diego's challenge has been. This, and we watched on that very porch where you guys ate all the bananas and did all kinds of stuff, is where we did the interviews for the Diego documentary. And this is what Diego says, and it was not rehearsed. This comes from his heart. He says, the main thing for me now is, what am I going to do here for the kingdom of God or kingdom of heaven? Why the Lord allowed me to be born here? Just to drink coffee? To eat something? No, he's got a vision for us. Are you doing your vision? The vision from God in a little g, or God in a big G in your life? Or are you doing your own vision? That's the main thing that you have to ask today. Are you following the vision that God has for you? Or are you following your own vision? That's been Dot in my prayer for this trip for quite some time. There will be some of these that are going to grab onto this vision. And the way we like to think of things is that a very small change today in your life, in the trajectory of history over the next hundreds or hundreds of years, if we're still here, if God hasn't or Jesus hasn't returned, can make a huge, huge difference in the legacy you leave. Diego gave this challenge on that very same porch to four or five young potential interns in missions in Southeast Asia. And he said this, if in 5 years you affect one person for Christ, then it'll have been worth everything that we invested in you to complete this. And I fully believe that. So often we have such, our eyesight is so very, or our foresight is so very short. And we need to think bigger.
Dear Lord, I want to thank you for today. I want to thank you for bringing everyone here safely. I want to thank you for bringing us home from Nicaragua safely as well. And I want to thank you for the life-changing trip that we got to experience. I want to thank you for just being with us every day and going through our lives. And I want to bless everyone here. Amen. You're dismissed.